From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Monday, December 3rd, 2018. And on this day, more public relations troubles for Central Maine Power after a newspaper article revealed it may try to pass on the cost of a billing error it made to customers. And the five, yes, five, candidates to be Maine's Attorney General. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, presenting Gardens Aglow, where visitors will see the gardens in a whole new light, now through December 31st. MaineGardens.org.
Central Maine Power is contending with a new public relations challenge after the Portland Press-Herald revealed that the company failed to bill thousands of new customers for electricity they used and may try to charge the rest of its customer base to cover the expense. Fred Bever has details.
CMP says it's seen a surge in new service requests driven by a residential building boom in southern Maine. Spokeswoman Catherine Hartnett says the new hookups coincided with some retirements in CMP's billing department. That was related to a company-wide early retirement incentive CMP had offered its employees. Hartnett says about 3,400 new CMP customers who are receiving electricity haven't been billed for all or some portion of it, in some cases for 2 months or more.
Right now, we are not imposing our lack of ability to create an account on the individual's accounts who are not receiving bills. We are only charging them for the past 30 days of use, and we feel that that's fair to those customers.
Hartnett says the total value of lost revenues will not be calculated until the books are closed on 2018, and she adds that it's possible that when CMP subsequently asks the Public Utilities Commission to approve a new rate structure, the company may ask that all its customers make up any shortfall created by the undercharges. PUC spokesman Harry Lanfear emphasizes that the commission can hold ratepayers harmless for lost sales that are due to a company failure and instead could put the onus on CMP's investors. In general, he says,
to the extent that a utility's management practices are found to be unreasonable or not prudent on a particular issue, the commission would determine the most appropriate remedy to protect ratepayers. That's what we do, including having shareholders absorb those costs.
The commission has several inquiries open on CMP's billing practices and rates, including a comprehensive audit of apparent overbillings to tens of thousands of customers. That audit is expected to be issued this month. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
Maine is the only state in the nation that allows the legislature to elect its attorney general, and that vote is scheduled for Wednesday. But since only Democrats are vying for the position, the winner will actually be the party nominee, and that will be decided tomorrow. Five candidates have been campaigning for the post, crisscrossing the state in an effort to win over Democratic lawmakers in advance of that vote. Mal Leary has more.
In the wake of last month's election, Democrats have big majorities in both the Maine House and Senate. That's why Republican leaders have said they aren't planning on even nominating any candidates for Attorney General. Among the Democrats vying for their party's nomination, Portland State Senator Mark Dion, who announced this past June shortly after losing in the Democratic gubernatorial primary. Dion says he has several policy issues that he would push if elected AG.
The ownership of groundwater, we need to move to put that in the public trust. I think as climate change advances, how we manage that commodity.
Dion has a long career in law enforcement, including a stint as Cumberland County Sheriff. Like all of the candidates, Dion praises current Attorney General Janet Mills for her management of the office, but says priorities will change when Mills become governor and is no longer spending a lot of time battling Governor Paul LePage in court. Bangor State Representative Aaron Fry is also seeking the nomination. A defense attorney, Fry has served on the Appropriations Committee and says he sees new opportunities for reform on the horizon.
We're going to see some significant efforts in the legislature for criminal justice reform. The Attorney General is in the prime position to help move that conversation and talk about different ways that we can be more compassionate.
And Fry says he expects that the new AG will also be working alongside other state attorneys general on lawsuits aimed at protecting federal environmental laws from being weakened by the Trump administration. Yarmouth attorney Tim Shannon says that would be a top priority for him if elected. Shannon is a partner at Verrill Dana, one of the state's largest law firms, and says his considerable private litigation experience would be helpful as attorney general.
My focus is going to be on tweaking policy, making sure that the office has an active, effective, professional, forward-looking posture. I think the challenges we're coming into now require a thoughtful, balanced, progressive approach.
Shannon is the only person in the race who doesn't hold a public office. Megan Maloney was just re-elected as district attorney for Kennebec and Somerset counties, but says she was encouraged to run for AG by several of her former House colleagues. She says the way that Maine's Attorney General's position is chosen, as laid out in the state constitution, provides an added degree of independence.
That is a unique position that we have given to our attorneys general, and it's one that I think is very important at this moment of time. This moment in history is what makes that position so important.
Like the other candidates, Maloney believes that a top priority will be joining with other states in legal efforts to protect federal environmental laws. Holton Senator Mike Carpenter was also just reelected for another term in a district that traditionally leans Republican. He served as Maine's Attorney General from 1991 to 1995 and calls it the best job he ever had. Carpenter says if he's elected AG, he'd focus on any number of emerging issues.
I want to take another look at joining the other attorneys, some of the other attorneys general who are suing Big Pharma, the opioid crisis. I know there's some climate change litigation out there that's being pushed by some states, and I want to take a look at that.
Carpenter points to his lengthy private sector experience and his 4 years as attorney general to make a case for why he stands out from the field. All five candidates say they believe the next AG should take steps to improve the state's relationship with its Native American tribal communities. They all say there are sovereignty issues posed by the tribes that should be reviewed. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
A visiting art exhibition in Portland's been getting some looks and encouraging members of Maine's gay, lesbian, trans, and queer communities to tell their personal stories. It's a multimedia installation called Eulogy for a Dyke Bar. It examines the history of these social spaces while also raising questions about why they're disappearing. Willis Ryder Arnold has our story.
USM professor Wendy Chapkis is seated next to the exhibit in the University of Southern Maine's Portland Campus Center's Area Gallery and describes what's before her.
Well, it has a giant neon sign on the wall that says Dyke Bar. It has a television that is playing on a loop, a documentary of local people telling their queer bar stories.
Inside the life-size fake bar are bottles, a jukebox, and a wall pasted with letters thanking the bar owners for their service. Chapkis, who teaches gender and sexuality studies, says she brought Eulogy for the Dyke Bar to campus as a capstone for a 3-year project. Querying the Past Maine, as it's called, documents oral histories from Maine's gay, lesbian, trans, and queer communities and presents that audio online. Chepkis says that for her generation, the Dyke Bar, a space that caters to lesbian clientele, was a cultural institution.
When I was coming out, the gay bar was the community center. It was the place where we did organizing. It was the place where we found each other. It was the place where we looked around a room and saw ourselves mirrored in the other faces around us, where we could flirt without it being risky.
Artist Macon Reed says she conceived the piece while living in a Chicago neighborhood that had no such bars. Reed now lives in New York City, but recently attended the Skowhegan School of Painting and Sculpture and trained in documentary studies at the Salt Institute in Portland years ago. She says her work at Salt influenced the Eulogy project.
So I feel like Salt really kind of sparked that excitement about storytelling in me. I mean, it seems almost like now I'm using the visual art as an excuse to create these elaborate installations that then I just have people tell me stories inside of.
And those stories are an integral part of exhibiting the installation. Each presentation is paired with a storytelling event in which people share their bar stories and the influence that the experience of those spaces had on their lives. At one such event last month in Portland, captured on video, Sarah Holmes shared her memories of turning 21 at Sisters, a bar in Portland that has since closed.
It was a place where we were at home and we were part of a family that was in some ways far stronger than blood could ever be, far stronger than, you know, legal connections or legal equality could ever be. It was a place that was ours.
Artist Macon Reed says stories like Holmes might help bridge the generational gap between those who have been able to experience Dyke Bars and those who have not. It also prompts questions about why these gathering spaces have been in decline in the LGBTQ community in recent years. Reed attributes their closures in part to the fact that women face a wage gap that makes it difficult to support these businesses. And, she says, the assimilation and broader acceptance of gay, lesbian, and queer cultures have also contributed to the decline of lesbian-specific spaces.
If you can go to Applebee's now and be gay, like, do you need to just go to the Dyke Bar and be gay?
Beneath the neon Dyke Bar sign, Professor Chapkis says that sharing those stories and exhibiting Eulogy for the Dyke Bar is an act of resistance, a testament to an evolving culture that won't succumb to prejudice.
We're going to make our history accessible to the public. We're going to record it. We're going to perform it. We're not going to be silenced. We're not going to be erased.
The exhibit closes December 7th. It's been shown at the influential Pulse Art Fair in New York, but this is the first time that it's been shown in a smaller city, such as Portland. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Willis Ryder Arnold.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Monday, December 3rd, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.